Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, thank you for the introduction. And yes, good morning, everybody. It is a Friday, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Sad day, John.
Very sad day. What a tragedy last night. Omar Edwards, young
cop. Omar Edwards, 25 years old, 2 years on the job as a cop, two young kids, just got married a little while ago, you know, and he's dead. You know, who knows exactly what happened. What seems to have happened is that his car was being broken into. He chased the guy. He was coming off duty, so he had his weapon, but he wasn't wearing a bulletproof vest. And other cops thought he was running and threatening the guy that he was chasing. And one of the officers apparently fired. Why and how much notification and procedures, we just don't know. It's starting to investigate.
Still don't know any conversations that went on? Or
no. You know, it happened at 10:30 last night, and I think by 2:30 in the morning when we did our press conference, everybody was pretty tired. And the answer is, you know, people get a chance to sleep on it. We all look at security cameras and interview witnesses, and there were some from a distance. And at night, and I was listening to the, every report has a different view of what happened. It's, it is, in criminology, not easy. You ask five people to, you put them in a room and show them a film, and then ask all five separately what happened, and you get five totally different answers, a lot mutually exclusive. But the bottom line is, Omar Edwards is gone. And, you know, I spent a little bit of time with his wife, and his wife's father is a police officer, 19 years, 16 years, something like that, on the job, and he was there as well. You know, what do you say?
There's nothing to say. I'm curious, what did they say? Besides, obviously, the pain and grief, and
the mother, and
the father, the wife,
just pain and grief. That's not. Yeah, you know, whatever happened wasn't somebody deliberately trying to kill somebody, and whether procedures were followed or whether we could do better, that's what Commissioner Kelly and the senior staff will study. They'll interview everybody. They'll, you know, there were a sergeant and two cops in the car. But, you know, the only thing that can come out of this is to improve procedures so perhaps it doesn't happen again. But as we all know, policing is a dangerous job, and accidents happen when people have guns in their hands, even legal guns in this case, which they are authorized and trained to use. And I think it's easy for people to say, oh, you know, how can things happen? But when the adrenaline's running and you don't know where the bullets are coming from and you don't know who that person is on the other side of the street, it's easy to second guess.
Absolutely.
But that's why they're trained. And you know, can you ever do enough training? I suppose not.
You also have, I am sure, the devastation of the officer that pulled the trigger. I'm sure that, you know, he is devastated as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's reason to be sympathetic, I suppose, is quite the right word. I thought about that last night. I'm never sure how to feel or whatever, but the bottom line is something went horribly wrong, was not a premeditated shooting by any means, and what we've got to do is go on. Omar Edwards has two young kids. All you can do is build a better world for them.
Yeah, it is a tragedy. You know what I want to do here? All right, well, we've got. Let me introduce our guest. Do we have Ed Schuyler, Deputy Mayor?
Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler is with us.
Used to be your press secretary.
He's grown since then.
Well, he's like the rest of us. He's gotten slightly older. But Ed, great to see you.
Yeah, the difference, John, is he hasn't lost any hair.
And he's certainly in better shape than you and I. Well, I will talk for myself and not incriminate you. Ed, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, John. Good to see you.
Ed Schuyler is a important cog in the city wheels. I mean, he's an important man.
I think that is understating the work that Ed does. It makes a big difference, runs a big part of the city. And, you know, we need to keep attracting people like Ed. But I remember him when he was fresh out of the... He started out in the Parks Department, a little-known fact.
With a rake in your hand?
No, but I did... My first job was running a summer youth program, so that was as close as I got to actual... You know,
well, that's actually very interesting that you know, somebody of a career New York City employee so far. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And moved up.
We're called permanent government.
Permanent government.
For better or for worse.
Hey, listen, I know one of the things you're here to talk about is Notify NYC. In fact, Mr. Mayor, you and I talked about it briefly last Friday.
Yeah, we're the mayor launched the program with the Speaker of the City Council and the Community Board representatives last week. And what's important about this problem is we're really responding to a need that has arisen over the last couple of years. We live in a big city, a lot of things happen, and what we find is when there are emergencies in the city, there is a real thirst for information. And because we have technology that we didn't have several years ago, whether it's BlackBerries and, you know, text messaging and all of these things, people want to see government use that technology, and that's what Notify NYC is all about. And people can sign up for it on nyc.gov, and we can communicate with people about situations, whether it's through email, text messaging, reverse 911, which is essentially a voice recording where there's a message sent to somebody's landline or cell phone, and get information to people. And it could be if a snowstorm is going to shut down the schools, or it could be something a little more severe. We have sent out in the pilot program, which was very successful over the last year and a half, we've sent out notifications on building collapses, on fires, on different weather situations around the city. We had a tornado in the north east Bronx at one point. So it's been a useful tool. People have voted with their, you know, with their mouse and signed up for it.
Well, I was curious how many people have signed up
so far. We have 15,000 people.
And what's your estimates now that you go public?
We have 8.4 million people that live here, so we can sustain a lot of capacity. On our part, what we're relying is on the carriers, whether it's AT&T and Verizon. You know, once we send the message out, it's for the networks to actually be able to, you know, handle the load of getting the information. And one thing we are concerned about is in the, you know, 9/11 type of event, when the telecommunications infrastructure is overloaded, getting information to people and making sure that, you know, these messages get through. It does take, when you send out thousands of messages, it can take a couple minutes for it to cycle through. But that's why this is one tool in the toolbox as far as communicating with the public. The mayor has the ability, through an agreement with the state broadcasters, to basically get on radio instantly and have information on a television screen. We also have sites around the city where the mayor can tap into fiber networks and broadcast the message. So this is not something that we can totally rely on, but it's an effective complement to the other ways we can communicate with the public.
How does somebody, when you go to the website, when you go to newyorkcity.gov, what do you get? Do you have to give cell phone or whatever information
you want to sign up for? But if you want, you know, obviously your email and that type of information. And this is not something that we're going to sell for telemarketers. So you're not going to get that annoying warranty phone call every month about your car insurance. Yeah, this is just for us, and we're not going to sell it. And people should feel assured of that. And the feedback we've had from the program has been very positive. So now that we're going citywide, we tried in 4 community boards. Lower Manhattan was one of them. We tried the Rockaways. We tried part of Staten Island, part of the Bronx. And now people can sign up for different zip codes. And if you work in one neighborhood and live in another, you can sign up for more than one zip code.
Who controls it, Mr. Mayor? I mean, does it come out of Ed's
Ed, Office of Emergency Management? Mm-hmm. I mean, we do all these things, are all coordinated, and there's a whole bunch of people. So if, you know, Ed's on vacation, you want to make sure that it still functions. Or if, you know, OEM is at a company picnic, you don't want to let things go. This is a very serious thing. It could be life and death. And people come to depend on these things, and you want to have the credibility that it's accurate and always works, and that you don't use it for ridiculous things. You know, putting out, going to be a Subway baseball series, which I predict this year, incidentally, that's not what you want to use it for, to announce, oh, the Yankees and Mets just both won their conferences. No, this is for really serious, life-threatening things that we want to make sure you don't worry about. For example, the plane flying around the
Statue of Liberty,
nobody knew about in advance, or at least we had a breakdown in communications in our shop as well as elsewhere. But the next time we had planes going up and down the river for Fleet Week, there was a message going out. I got it on mine.
That's right. And what we have to make sure we don't have things slip through the cracks is we are hiring public notification specialists that will work in Watch Command, which is OEM's 24/7 facility. They will monitor what's going on in the city, and if there is a message they think is relevant that the public would want to know about, they will send it out.
Can you tune this to a neighborhood?
You can go by zip code.
Down to zip code.
Which is pretty fine.
Yeah, okay. As technology gets better, we'll be able to go almost block by block.
So if there was an event in Tribeca, you could alert the folks down there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think down the road you'll see more of this. Traffic on your moving map on your BlackBerry or cell phone isn't really very good yet, but it's getting there. And someday you will be able to know, you know, where that traffic jam is and take an alternate route. You know, this can be used to notify you about a tornado, which is life-threatening, but you'll see technology. You know, you can look at a radar map already on a mobile device.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. Yeah, it really is. Ed, stay where you are because I know that you're involved in another question I have about this garbage transfer out in Queens. But let me take a break right here, and we'll come right back with that question for not only Ed Schuyler, but Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. Don't forget, speaking of questions, you get to ask at the end of the program, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question to Mayor Michael Bloomberg, line up right now, 800-321-0710. I'll be right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
22 minutes after 8 o'clock, John Gambling here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler. Mr. Mayor, you and I have talked about the garbage issues here that you've been working on. Seemingly
solid waste management.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Solid waste management. You have been successful in setting up transfer stations that you plan to use with the new system?
There's 22,000 tons of solid waste generated in the city every day. About half of it picked up privately, about half picked up by the sanitation department. And just in case anybody's interested, I have tried very hard to compare the costs of private sector versus public sector, because this is something where half the garbage is private, half the garbage. And it's a little bit hard because the sanitation department has a responsibility to also plow the streets and pick up the baskets, clean up vacant lots, and that sort of thing. But nevertheless, the sanitation department actually does it very well, and our streets are cleaner than ever, and very efficiently. It's really hard to see that the private sector in this case is better. I'm not opposed to private sector stuff when it fits, but in this case, the sanitation department does a great job. Anyways, there is a problem with solid waste that we have to pick it up with trucks, then we take it to a location, then it gets trucked out of the city to landfills. We used to take it to Fresh Kills, close that, and we're not going to open it. Don't anybody worry about that. So, but they go down to Pennsylvania and North Carolina, other states, someplace anyways. And these trucks are big polluting trucks, and they clog the streets and pollute our air. And so I charged Ed with the responsibility of coming up with what we call a SWAMP, the Solid Waste Management Plan, SWMP, and making sure that every borough shares the pain a little bit. That's the fair ways to do it and politically makes some sense that everybody feels they're not...
Everybody's making garbage.
Yeah, and everybody's going to be part of the solution. And Ed's come up with a real plan. And one of the ways you get it out, some places where there's rail, you put it right on a railroad car, which is sealed and is very efficient in terms of low pollution and cost isn't all that that bad. Our real cost is paying what they call tipping fees, whoever runs the dump. That's what the big expense. Anyways, another ways to get out of the city is on barges, which get covered and sealed, and that's what you're talking about is a transfer station
by LaGuardia.
This one happens to be in Queens, but there are other ones in the city, and this is one where the FAA has approved it and looked at it, and Ed can tell you, people are trying to make a risk out of something that the FAA doesn't think there's a risk, and we have plenty
issue
of evidence.
Issue of the birds.
That's
the question.
So this is a transfer station, it's called the North Shore transfer station. It's actually a recommissioning of a transfer station that actually operated from 1954 to 2001.
I remember, yeah.
So this is not a new use for that facility and LaGuardia obviously coexisted with it peacefully during that period. When we design it in light of, you know, the environment. And one of the things, it has a similar design as we have in Staten Island, where everything is done indoors and we have odor control. and that the garbage, by the time it gets outside the facility, is in a sealed container and then loaded on a gantry crane onto the barge and then barged away. And in Staten Island, where we have the same design, in the middle of Fresh Kills landfill, we don't have a bird problem. We have not seen an attraction of wildlife. So we've proven that that is not really an issue. We also had it exist there before, and that wasn't a problem.
Yeah, let me also point out that the birds that are dangerous to airplanes are the bigger birds like geese. But geese don't go to waste piles. Seagulls do, for example. But the smaller birds are still dangerous, but less of a problem if an airplane engine were to ingest one.
And we don't design in a vacuum. And we need approvals. We got approvals from the State Department of Environmental Conservation. We also got approvals from the Port Authority and the FAA, which determined this was not a hazard. So what you're seeing is and you know, Crane's did an investigative piece about this in this week's newspaper or edition, which basically revealed that this whole stirring up of making people nervous about this is being funded by Tully because they have a current contract. To take the city's garbage, which they would lose because the city would be taking the garbage out of its own facility. We spend about $25 million a year paying Tully to transport the city waste, and because we'd have this new self-sufficient system with marine transfer stations, we wouldn't need them anymore.
When does the system get up and running? I mean, do you have pieces of it?
Parts of it are going already. Ed's got the Staten Island. All the waste goes out by rail.
In Bronx.
In the Bronx, it all goes out by rail already. It's hard to get a train off of Long Island, meaning Brooklyn and Queens. There's only one railroad line that's up north of the Tappan Zee Bridge, and it's shared with passenger traffic, so there's all sorts of federal regulations on when you can do that. You basically, passenger lines, you can't have freight on the same line for a variety of reasons, accidents way in the past, although you can have some. So the real answer for coming out of Queens and Brooklyn is using the marine transfer, and same thing with Manhattan. It's hard to get it off.
Does the barged material get transferred to trains at some point, or does it get barged to some place?
It can be. We have a separate provider, which we actually have bids out, and it gets transloaded generally onto trains and then goes to wherever the company has a landfill or however wants to dispose it. We're also not opposed to if people want to use it for waste-to-energy facilities, and that's the bid that wins, and that's the most cost-effective for the city. That's something we use partially now. And we're
that's where you actually burn the garbage.
Yeah, well, there's a company in New Jersey that...
And there's new technology, I gather, that burns it almost 100% clean.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole separate issue, controversial. There's in Nassau County, they have a big incineration facility that's been going for a long time. But the issue here is plain and simple. We have to either continue to pollute and clog and rip up the streets, or find another ways to get the solid waste out. There are very few places where you can put it because an awful lot of our coastline is already developed, so there are a limited number of places. And in this case, as Ed said, we've done all of the gone through all of the approvals, and the FAA does not see a problem with this. Our experience, these things are so enclosed in this day and age, and you're going to have birds whether you have this or not.
Can't
so,
make them go away.
Right. This is also not near the runways. I mean, you can see it across when you fly over it when you're coming into LaGuardia, but it's not like it's right under the paths.
All right. Well, good work. I mean, it's a never-ending battle, I'm sure, trying to clean this place up or keep it as clean as it is. Ed Schuyler, great to see you again.
Thank you for having me, John.
It's been wonderful. I haven't seen you in a couple of years, so good to have you back in the studio. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take a break right here, our second break. Don't forget, if you've got a question, get in line, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. On the half hour at 8:30 on a Friday morning, let's go check the news. Here's Joe Bartlett. It's John and Mayor Mike on a Friday here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR, 23 now before 9 o'clock. Again, we've got a line or two open. 800-321-0710 is our telephone number if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. So they closed Broadway to traffic. Your evaluation?
It so far, now in all fairness, it is, remember, the summer, a short week, and a poor economy. So traffic would not be that bad anyways. But so far, it is working exactly as the computer modeling says it will. The problem here is when you have a diagonal street that goes across a grid, it screws up the big North and South Avenues, 6th and 7th in this case, 6th coming uptown, 7th going downtown, because the traffic's crossing. And you have a you have to have lights that adjust for both the avenue, for the diagonal street, and for the crosstown streets. And then also you have the problem of, if you think about it, in one block you can have three lights, one on 6th and one on 7th, crosstown lights, but also one in the middle. And if the middle one happens to be near the either end, then the last gap between two lights is very small, and so people tend to block the box and that sort of thing. And what Broadway also has been, over the last couple of years, reduced down to a two-lane street anyway. So when people say, oh, there's all this traffic, there is not. Broadway is a two-lane street basically from Columbus Circle down to Times Square and from Herald Square down to Madison Square Park. So what we're doing is, with fire lanes for emergency, changing it into pedestrian only. Now, the pedestrians, we've had a phenomenally high accident rate in Times Square and Herald Square. The sidewalks just can't hold the number of people, so people are walking in the streets. And the traffic is terrible. If you go from, let's say, the 70s, and you want to go to the Broadway Broadway Theater, it can take you 45 minutes at 7:30 at night. I don't care what anybody says. If you want to be in your seat at 8 o'clock, you better leave at 7. And so it can't get any worse, and the pedestrian situation can't be worse. And the truth of the matter is, it looks like it's going to be a lot better, both for cars and for pedestrians. And we'll see. You'll do it. Keep in mind, John, we're not the only ones doing this. A whole bunch of European cities with the same kind of the world's coming to an end mentality did it, and it's worked there. Will it work here? I don't know. But unless you try it, you're never going to know.
How about the usage of those chaise lounges? And,
well, that the local bid, Tim Tompkins went out and bought them for $10, a whole bunch. I was surprised. Sunday night I went over there, just 7 o'clock at night. I think it'd be deserted. It was mobbed. Walking around, talking to everybody. There will not be those kinds of lounges. There will be the same kind of chairs that you see now on streets like Broadway, up and above and below, where there's cut-off lanes and places for pedestrians and chairs and tables and that sort of thing. People say, well, I won't use them in the winter. Actually, as long as it's not snowing or raining, even in the cold weather, people sit outside, they like it. But the bottom line here is, we can't sit around and complain about traffic and not try to do something. And, you know, Jeanette Sedekon, the commissioner of the Department of Transportation, is trying something.
And if it doesn't work, you can put it back to its
If it doesn't
way.
Work, you right. can put it back. I think it will work. It's great for the merchants because there's a lot more foot traffic outside. People say, oh, deliveries are terrible. You could not stop on Broadway with a truck before, okay? Trucks had to park on the side and bring stuff around on carts. There's no difference there. Cab drivers. I was with a union leader yesterday who said to me, just unsolicited, he said he'd taken three cabs that morning, or the afternoon before and that morning, and asked all of them what was happening. He said all three cab drivers loved it. So, see, cabs make money when they're moving. And yes, they can't drop you off now for a few blocks on Broadway, but they couldn't get there before. And if you need a cab on Broadway, all you've got to do is walk at most half a block, and you can still get your cab. So the cab drivers will like this in the end, just like, remember, the cab drivers had all of this yelling and screaming about the credit cards. They didn't want credit cards in the cabs. All studies show that they are getting so much big tips, you don't hear any complaints.
All right, segue into the shared ride program.
Another thing to try. You know, there'll be some cabs which will be well designated. If you don't want to share a cab with somebody else, don't hail it. But if
they will be identified.
Oh, absolutely. But you can get it for less. Why should we not give people the choice? If they don't want to have a cab themselves and they can afford it, do it. If they don't want to have a cab for themselves and want to get it cheaper, the only way you're going to get cheaper is to share and have somebody else pick up part of the tab. And, you know, listen, we've done it during transit strikes. Lots of cities have it. You come in from the airports. You know, the starter at the beginning tries to pull people together at Kennedy and LaGuardia. So why are we doing this? But it's just another thing. Change is scary. Change is difficult. But shame on us if we don't try new things. some of which will work, some won't.
All right, speaking of trying new things, you are very involved and very politically active on environmental issues. Plastic bags, and the city council has said that the nickel refund idea.
I haven't
maybe
talked to Chris Quinn about that yet. Ed Schuyler has been doing a lot of our negotiations between the administration and the city council. I can tell you this. We will come to an on-time budget with the city council. It'll be a responsible budget. It will try to include, to the extent possible, everybody's concerns and everybody's desires. And it's going to require people to pay if you want services. Other than that, there are all sorts of little things, and a lot of this stuff is, you know, you want one thing, but you can't get it, but you can get part of it, or I'll give you what you want, even though I don't really like it, if you give me what I think is more important. That's what responsible negotiations in a democracy are. And I've said this 1,000 times. The negotiations with the city council, Chris Quinn has everybody on the city council involved, to the extent you can have 51 people involved in something. She's got a good staff. The administration has excellent people, Ed and Mark Page and a whole bunch of other people working together. Haida Mahaltas, who's the government relations person, deals with the city council, works for Kevin Sheekey. Michelle Goldstein does the same thing up in Albany, and Bill Daley down in Washington, because we deal with all three legislators, so you have to have good people that understand the needs and try to work. It's called democracy, and you're not going to do it in the newspapers. You can't do that, but we will come up with an on-time, responsible budget. My personal opinion is that the bag issue happens to be an environmental thing and a revenue thing. The ways the sanitation department was going to meet their goal of reducing expenses was this was going to give us revenue instead of a cut. If we don't do this, we'll have to cut something. There's just only so many dollars. We don't operate the way the state does or the federal government does.
All right, so the swine flu situation continues. I think the anxiety level is somewhat
muted. What's happened is we closed, numbers may be off by a little bit, but as of yesterday morning, I think we had closed 49 schools, 43 of them had been reopened. I think we closed another half a dozen last night. What seems to happen is that when they come back to school after a couple of days, absenteeism is right down to what it normally is, and no new kids, one or two, but no more than that, are showing up sick, which is good news. You know, we don't want to close all the schools. The kids need the schooling, and the parents have to sometimes miss work to take care of the kids, and some parents want to keep their kids out. They have a right to do that. Other parents want their kids to go to school, and we have an obligation to keep the schools going, but it has so far worked out. What's going to happen in the fall, you know, nobody knows.
Why has there not been more specificity when it comes to the underlying conditions of the four that died?
There has been total specificity on what underlying conditions are. There's a whole list of them. Which ones these people? Let's assume that one of these people died because they had diabetes. Does that mean that if
everybody with diabetes?
No, nor does it mean if you don't have that one underlying condition but have 10 others, like let's say you're overweight or something. It's nonsensical to plan change your life based on a couple of these things. All of the things on the list that our Department of Health and Mental Hygiene put out, every one of them, if any of those apply to you and you start getting sick, call your doctor. You and your doctor should make the decision, and not just because somebody else had a different medical experience. So, and also, it's true that we have to protect the privacy of the people that died. But we're not taking away any information whatsoever. Quite the contrary. I can tell you that in all four of the cases of the people who have died, the underlying conditions that contributed to, not caused, but contributed to the fact that they were weak and then the flu was what in the end, or perhaps pneumonia, it's hard to tell in some cases, all of them were on that list. And with only four people, you don't have everything on that list that was applied to all to these four. But if you're healthy and over 2 years old and under 65 and not pregnant, and you get this flu, stay home. cover your mouth and nose, wash your hands, don't go back to work or school for 24 hours after the symptoms go away. If you're in a high-risk category, very young, very old, or one of the pre-existing conditions, don't go to the hospital. Call your doctor.
Has the health commissioner told you that he is optimistic that we are on the downslope of this thing?
Tom is a very careful guy. We just don't know. I mean, tomorrow it could go back up or tomorrow it could disappear. It does seem to be trending in the right direction. That's what we know. The rest is speculation. And will it come back next year? If they build a vaccine, will the vaccine work next year? Or will a different version of the flu show up? It's all guesswork that doesn't work the way you'd think. Well, why don't they know? They don't know. And every year, the government, the drug companies get together, and they decide which strain of vaccine, of flu, is likely to come. They build a vaccine for that. And sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong. But it's true that it has been, for those that get it, without pre-existing conditions or endangered categories like being pregnant or old or young, it's been relatively mild, and most of the people go back very quickly. And we've had a surprisingly few number of deaths among elderly. Typically, flu, it runs through the population through kids. Kids tend to carry it every place, but it's the elderly that typically die. We have not had many elderly die from this, which is good, obviously. And one theory is that there must have been a strain back in the 50s similar to this one.
Talked about that,
and
yeah.
People have antibodies, except that Tom Frieden told me one time, he said, we're not sure antibodies last that long.
Right.
So who knows?
All right, final question before we get to the questions of those on the phone at 800-321-0710. Meryl Control, it is running out. The law that gives you that opportunity is running out. There's a lot of politics going back and forth. Are there things that you are willing to concede to make sure that you keep Meryl Control of the
schools? John, we can always do a better job, and we're trying to work with Shelley Silver and with Malcolm Smith and the governor to improve the law. There's no reason this law can't be improved. I think, you can't have this fight every 4 years and whatever. But the two things are true. One, you can improve the law, but it's because you can't gut Meryl Control. Either the mayor controls it or not. And two, the results of Meryl Control so far, the test results that were out last week, the week before, which I showed to the president of the United States when I was down there, on English, off the charts. Some people say test easier or harder 1 year. The difference between the city and the state is the gap is going down dramatically in English test scores, which says whether the test is easier or harder, New York City students are growing at a better rate than the state is. So that's very good news. And no big city comes remotely close to the state that it's in, I'm told. The second thing is that the way black and Latino kids perform in these tests, the difference between how they perform and white and Asian kids has been cut by better than a third. Now, this coming week, we're going to see math scores. I don't know what they're going to be, but our belief is that they will probably be very good reading, because in the case of English, you have to include kids who just come here and after 1 year haven't learned how to speak English, but they'd have to take the English test.
Sure.
They bring we have a lot of immigrants. They bring the average down. In math, that's not the case, because you can learn math in any language. So my hope is that come Monday, we'll have some very pleasant news. I think at this point, nobody is going to want to roll back Meryl Control, or let's say very few people will. And certainly Shelley Silver and Malcolm Smith and Randy Weingarten, I think in all fairness, they all get it. This is something that really, not perfect, but this has worked. And you got to be very careful in tampering with something that has made such a difference in the lives. And incidentally, you should give Shelley Silver, and Malcolm Smith was in the Senate, wasn't the majority leader at the time, and Governor Patterson wasn't the governor, but Shelley was the one that was there. You got to give all these guys credit and women, because they gave us Meryl Control back in 2002. And so all of these improvements, they deserve some of the credit too. And I think, do they want to walk away from that? Do they want to be blamed if it doesn't work? No, they want to be there with big smiles on their faces and look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, I really made a difference, when this improvement continues going forward.
All right, we're going to continue to go forward. When we do, Mr. Mayor, we'll go to the phones for the questions. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we are back, and it is time to go to the telephones, and we're going to start with Gloria in Manhattan. Gloria, you've got the mayor's ear. Go. Hello, Gloria.
Hi. I don't know if I'm on, but a lot of people don't understand how mayoral control really impacts the real people who work in the schools. I worked in the schools and way back, and for a long time we had the Board of Education, which was instituted by John Lindsay and then eliminated with mayoral control. And we all sort of felt like there was this huge political machine, and it disempowered you.
What's the question, Gloria?
The question is, I mean, are there actual figures? I know a lot of, when it was eliminated, we eliminated a lot of jobs. There's so much waste in government and spending on placeholder positions. Are there any figures about how much money we save?
Gloria, there's roughly, my recollection is, I think something like $350 million a year were taken out of the bureaucracy. They had 32 separate districts, which is still there in the law, but each had its own superintendent with an enormous staff. They were all housed over in Brooklyn, 110 Livingston Street, which is now an apartment building. And all of that money was put into the classroom. And that's one of the things here. People that want to bring all that back, where's the money going to come from? We're going to call up the principals and say, sorry, you have a smaller budget.
You don't need another $350 million.
And you don't need another level of bureaucracy. There's just, you know, it's nice. And superintendents, some of them are very good and really do provide something. But you don't need a whole nother bureaucracy to create dissension. The essence of mayoral control is that you get a bunch of people who are really smart. They make some decisions. They try it. If it works, they continue. If they don't, they change. I think it's true that the most, not all, but most of the teachers and most of the principals will tell you this is the school system in the country to work in, that this is the schools. We're the poster child in this country for how to improve. And the test, this one of the nice things about the school system is the test scores tell you whether you're doing a good job or a bad job. Some people don't like testing, but teachers basically, not all, but most, like testing because it tells them which kids are making progress and which kids they have to focus their resources on and help.
When I was in school, my teacher didn't like testing. It would have been made my life even a little bit easier. Frank in Whitestone, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Your Honor, I'm sorry.
No problem.
It seems to me with every mayor, we always give away something from New York City to someone else. One mayor gave Hollywood movie producing to Los Angeles. Another mayor gave away our television industry.
And what do you think this mayor?
And we're bringing back. Actually, it's I'm glad you brought it up because we've brought back an enormous amount of television and film production back to New York, not just from Los Angeles, but also from Canada and Eastern Europe.
What's the status of the tax break on filmmaking?
That's a problem because, and this is, you know, every other municipality starts giving tax breaks and you get into a bidding war, which I'm fundamentally opposed to, but this is an industry. What we've tried to do is to say it may be more expensive to do some things in New York, but you get a better workforce, which most people will tell you our people in this industry work very hard here in the city. And yes, they get paid more, but most producers and directors think it's worth it. And if you're going to film New York, you don't want to do it in a back lot set. You want to do it in
with the
New
real
York.
Thing, right?
Absolutely.
You want the real status.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, Frank is right. The mistakes made in the past, we brought it back, and that's why we're trying new things. That's why we're trying. We got to free up the city from traffic. That's why the Broadway thing, I hope, will work. I think so. So far, the evidence is good, but we'll see down the road.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'm sure there will be a lot on the list for next Friday. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Now have yourself a good week ahead.
You too.
Thank you very much. And that's going to do it for us. We'll be back on Monday, and we're going to have the candidates for governor on the Republican side. We'll have both of those candidates, and we'll hopefully have you as well. So enjoy your weekend. Thank you very much. It's 9 o'clock in the morning right here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR.